We had such a good outcome from last week's show. So what kind of society are we anyways that we decided to do it again since we had 2 weeks in a row and nobody wanted to get another show going? But it's a nice wide open topic, and everybody gets to say something. With me we have the Noble Blue, Mark Hammond, who's been with us before, our metaphysical angle. Joining us again, our anarchist angle, to the left of me, Johnny K. Fitzpatrick, and a longtime member, Margot Channing, is also with us. So, like I said, this is Say Can You See, What Kind of Society Are We Anyways? It's sort of an introspective of what kind of society are we, what kind of people are we in this country, how do we treat our children, our prisoners, our workers, our animals, our whatever. We wanted to make an emphasis on education this week because I think it's really important, something that we always like to talk about here. The children of this country can't get books, but we can send billions of dollars abroad to patch up countries we just bombed the hell out of. My first question to the panel would be, how do you feel about this country's educational system? How do you, do you have kids in school? Do you know people in school? How do you feel about it? Do you have any personal experience with it at all? Blue, you have a BA.
Oh, I got an MA.
Oh, he's got an MA. And a BA.
And an
AA.
So, I got 3 degrees.
So, maybe you could start out there. You've had a lot of education.
Yeah. It does seem like the relationship we have with our children is the fundamental element of society. Because they, in essence, are going to be the leaders of tomorrow. So our ideas today, at best, can come to fruition possibly through the minds and activities of the children. Now, I just saw an article or a TV show on A&E about Adolf Hitler, and he recognized this. So he went right for the kids.
Right for them.
Now, I think that our biggest crime in our society is probably that we try to condition children to survive in a world of our own fears.
See?
And therefore, we instill in our children this sense of paranoia from the start, and they end up with this sort of living in a state of denial. This country seems to be heavy in denial about what we're actually doing.
Denial.
With our kids, with society, with each other. And mainly it comes down to the relationship that we have with each other.
And the relationship we have with our children. With their part of us, right? Part of each other.
Yeah.
I know Margot has some points on education she'd like to bring up.
I do. And this relates education to the economy. And I firmly believe in education. I think it's very important to educate our children. As Blue said, they're going to be the leaders of tomorrow, of the future. But if you look at the economy and what's happening to it, so much outsourcing being done, jobs being shipped to India, to the Ukraine, to China, to Brazil. These aren't just unskilled jobs anymore. These are pink-collar and white-collar jobs. My point about education is, what's the point of educating our children if they are going to graduate from college and not have a job and have to move to India to find a job?
What's a pink-collar?
Basically clerical, administrative. You've never heard that term?
I've never heard that term.
Before, yeah, pink-collar, clerical, administrative type work.
Well, the more companies go away, I guess we won't need those people, will we?
Well, exactly, yeah.
You know, people are going to need jobs all over the world. People are going to need food all over the world. And we have a pretty cushy thing going on here. You know, I know we complain about it, all this stuff, but we, even though the poorest of people have a satellite dish, Detroit, you know, looks like it's a burned out city. But there's satellite dishes all over. People can still afford satellites, and they're off. We still have food, too. Too much. We're fat. The rest of the world needs things, and eventually things are going to have to change. And maybe we're not going to be able to have that comfortable state of living that we are comfortable with. You know, I'd like to see an outcome where we do it intelligently and are able to share jobs and trade, and there's a nice equal, I think that was the idea behind NAFTA, that everybody would be better suited with more fair trade. But it does look like a lot of jobs are leaving. They're talking that, it's not Gibson's, I forget what it's called, the big furniture place in Greenville's getting ready. They're talking about going,
Electrolux.
They're thinking about going to
Mexico.
Mexico. Yeah. That's what Greenville lives on. That's
exactly.
It's a huge place. I used to work out there with the iron workers, and it's huge. It's like a city itself.
Well, again,
Butternut went out.
Yeah,
there's little ones shutting down all around town.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for a job.
Cheaper labor, basically.
Yeah, for cheaper labor.
And again, my point is, we educate our children, so therefore, I mean, and that's good. An educated populace is a requirement to live in a society like we have, or a future society like all four of us sit here and dream about, I'm sure. But what does that mean then, that our children are going to have PhDs and be flipping hamburgers at McDonald's? I'm trying to think of jobs that can't get outsourced.
Service
Pretty
industry.
Hard to outsource hamburger making and ship it back quickly enough so it's still hot from Mexico or from India. Although,
well, that's why the immigrants are nice to get all those Mexican immigrants up here, because they're doing all the service jobs for us now. At least, you know, that's why people aren't so outraged about, I think, the big influx of all these people coming into our country, because, no, you know what, I don't want to flip burgers. I don't want to work in the textile factories.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be out shoveling wood chips in 90-degree heat.
Well, you may be, because the
types of jobs that are
being outsourced now are jobs that we send our children to college to train for, like CPAs.
Well, you can get
computer programmers.
You can get five engineers out of
engineers.
India mm-hmm. for the same price you can get one engineer here in America.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's capitalism.
Yeah,
that's what we love that capitalism,
these
right?
are professional type jobs that are going overseas and leaving our country, and for good. They're not going to be coming back.
Probably not.
You know, what about the people in India that are getting all these jobs and all these third world countries that are getting these jobs? Is that really helping them? I mean, are we, by shipping all these jobs overseas, are we really boosting their standard of living, or are we destroying their culture in the process?
I think a little bit of both. I think we're doing a lot of destruction of their culture. Now, I'm not a jet setter that travels all over the world, but the few places I have been overseas, you see a lot of United States capitalistic influence there, and I don't like that. I like to see their cultures. And what I mean by the infiltration of United States influence are the McDonald's, the Wendy's, the Pizza Hut.
$110 billion a year the fast food industry does. That is a lot of money, because you know how you see the lines. People are just, that is a super-sized industry. That's the same amount of money we're going to give, or nearly the same amount of money as we're going to get in Iraq. It's crazy.
Mm. It really makes you wonder, doesn't it, about whether society is better off with all of this technology, or whether there's something about the idyllic lifestyles of simple people that has a certain quality all of its own. If the real thing in society is to live a quality life and not just be a robot, then we got to find out what quality means. You know, what it really means to live a life that's full. Now, is having a job and working 80 hours a week, is that a quality life?
Well, probably not. No, I wouldn't say
it. People are killing themselves to get it. They want it.
They don't have any time to spend it. They're stressed out. They're exhausted. They don't have time to get to know their children. Oh,
but they got all kinds of stuff.
Quality.
Look at Arnie Schwarzenegger, man. He's got like 50 houses and, you know, jets and everything and $400 foot waffings. It's great.
50 Hummers.
50 Hummers.
His excess is really up there.
All these
conspicuous.
He's going to drive his Hummer.
But he's
to
the
Earth
hero.
Day.
See, he's the hero of America, because he's such a massive consumer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's something that I was actually going to bring up as a reflection on society. California, the great state of California, voted in Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Can you say?
I guess, you know, they've really been hurting. I guess it's a face man that everybody are always looking for anyway.
Okay. I have a question, though, of the panel. What would you counsel your children into which field right now to get them well educated so they could sustain a quality life when they got out of college or vocational school or whatever, you know, it doesn't have to be college. But what kind of a career would you kind of direct them into so that they wouldn't wind up losing their jobs because they were all being shipped to foreign countries? The jobs, that is, not the children. I'm just curious.
Gardening.
Gardening. Okay, it'd be pretty hard to outsource that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And it provides for yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, what kind of career is that? As a matter of fact, I think it's great too. I would love to go into like greenhouse botany, stuff like that, you know. Square foot gardening, to where you can feed way more people on a smaller plot of land and have it still be healthy and
organic.
Because farmers are just ripped the land and plant, and you know they wonder why. You know, it's a desert over there now, where that used to be a lush. The Garden of Eden is now what, just south of Baghdad or
something like
just
that,
north
yeah.
of it. It's mm-hmm. desert now, because I think they started farming a long time ago, and then they just tore up the topsoil and blew away. And over time, it just you know, a certain amount of it has to do with the planet and its cycles, but Dust Bowl, Oklahoma is the same thing. Lots of farmers have that problem. They have to bring in lime and everything every year to get their soil back to pH levels.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, that's off the subject. Well, my son is 14. He goes to City Middle High. And he's a pretty smart kid, but he is I hope he's not watching. He's a real slacker. He's real not really into anything, you know. We've got cable and a computer, and it was very funny what he said to him and his nephew. They excel in the art of lethargy because they don't really have to do anything anymore. You know, I was chopping wood and I had all kinds of chores when I was his age, but there's really nothing for him to do. I put the groceries away or take the garbage out. These aren't really things that are helping that much. I made him mow the lawn a couple times, but
mm-hmm.
I think I'd like to get him in because of what he likes. I'd like to see him get into some kind of computer programming or into the media somewhere, because I think that those are going to be big.
Well, computer jobs are being outsourced left and right.
But it's still a viable thing. You know, I guess they're all into computers these days, the kids their age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might consider that going about it from the old idea of getting a job is probably passé. I think in the future, because the society will be changing so quickly, the real skill to have is the ability to adapt and basically forget about getting a job and learn how to do work, see, mm-hmm. so you can have your own work, because then people can't take it away from you.
Well, that's the difference between education and training.
Mm-hmm.
Education teaches you, basically, you learn how to learn and to quickly adapt and to transfer skills and knowledge that you learned gardening mm-hmm. over quickly into something else, and you can scratch your head and say, oh yeah, I remember doing that in gardening. It's kind of sort of like that. And you're successful then at your second career, your third career, etc. So that makes perfect sense.
You really have to stay flexible and adaptable to the changes.
Well, you've hit on something evolutionary. It's our ability to adapt, or any species' ability to adapt, that brings them to the next level. Our ability to adapt comes from our brains. We're smart enough to put some clothes on and hide in a cave and huddle around some fire, or eat this when that was gone, and then somehow we scrounged our way here. It's our ability to adapt.
And if you think about that edge is really how do we learn to understand the new without being trapped into our old ways so that we don't see it. It's like every breakthrough in science comes at the expense of the accepted model. So the accepted model, when it's outdated, it doesn't fit the new information, but there's this sort of period of resistance until the new model is understood.
People don't like change.
So you got to look at how is it that we adapt to the new? What is the new? And how do we stay in the new so that we can remain cognizant of this moment in time and space and not get caught up in some kind of outmoded system?
Well, you guys were just talking about how you were worried about cultures, losing mm-hmm. all these cultures. You know, if there's anything certain, there's going to be change. Cultures are going to disappear. Maybe we'll be lucky to have some pictures and some stuff about books on them. But, I mean, it's linear thinking now. It doesn't go in cycles anymore. Stephen pointed out that the Jews, for the first to really start thinking about that, life is a linear thing. It goes forward. Maybe with a bunch of little cycles involved, but it still pushes on.
Yeah, I would hope, though, that cultures would evolve. I can see that happening. But it would be a terrible shame if they just totally disappeared.
Oh. Yeah.
I'm not so sure. I don't know. You know, really, what were we doing 100,000 years ago? You know, or even 50,000 or 25,000. Those all disappeared, and we're doing something entirely different now. I was reading a book recently about the bicameral mind development and how it's possible that these people back in the periods of the Trojan War and all that actually heard voices in their head and considered them to be gods, and that was the way that they lived their lives. They didn't have the ability to rationalize and abstract knowledge like we seem to have today. So we seem to have made certain progresses in certain intellectual areas. But the question is technical knowledge enough, and how do we stay so that we can see the new when it presents itself without distorting it into our fear of, you know, changing my conditioning? You know, and that's what we seem to have fear in, is when we get, my conditioning's being threatened here.
What condition your condition is in?
Yeah, what condition my condition's in.
But isn't there another factor, Blue? The bottom line here, the capitalistic factor that we don't have much control over, unless we happen to be capitalists ourselves running a business, that we have to take into account too. You know, how they're going to change us to better the bottom line of the company. And like I say, I don't think we have much control over that.
Yeah, our educational system, as it is right now, is kind of set up to accomplish that goal. In fact, it's to put people, to sort them,
sure,
in a sense. You know, the bright ones, the ones that fulfill the role of a manager, get a certain type of education, and the people who are destined to flip hamburgers receive a different type of education or no education at all. Except the important, you know, they might not receive the technical information that you were, education that you were referring to, but they do learn how to be socialized, to obey, and to fit their place.
There
was somebody, I can't remember exactly who pointed this out to me, something I read or heard recently. There's that old Greek know thyself phrase. And when we hear that in these current days, we think of, oh, that's very wise, we should introspect. But this person was pointing out that back then, what they meant was know your place, not know thyself, your own desires, but know your place in the society. If you're a slave, stay a slave. If you're a senator, you're a senator, you know.
I was appalled to find out, they did this to me when I was a kid. They had one group, two group, and three group. And every week it came out and there was the list. There were lists, it wasn't a group, they called it the list. And I was on that three list a lot, which is the worst, because I was probably couldn't sit at my desk all friggin' day, you know. Was bored, and they still have it now, but they have it like in colors. My niece was telling me that she didn't want to do this because she didn't want to get put on the red list, which was the bad list, and there was a blue that was okay, and like yellow that was the best, and that they put them in their place. They categorize them, you know what, you're a burger flipper, you're on list three. We don't think we want you up here with these other kids that are, you know, they let you know right away.
It's a caste system.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Well, as Mark, the director, producer of the show, often points out, they don't want to live as
I refuse to stay in my place.
Oh.
made his break for freedom.
He's making a big break. Well,
continue.
I think he had a piece.
Let's carry on.
Okay. Well, the question remains about society, you know. Looking at ourselves and our relationship to society is really the responsibility of each individual. Now, people can say, well, I'm a victim. I don't have any choice. You know, I've got no chance. But I think as long as you got that kind of an attitude, that's all you're going to see, really. But when you start inspiring yourself to think along creative lines, start finding things in society that you can do that are unique to you, then you can start creating a life that's compatible and fulfilled. But this idea of just becoming another slot in the great corporate machine and having that as an ambition, you know, let's take a look at that whole thing about ambition. What the heck is that all about? Why is it that everybody's in competition with each other?
Well, yeah, and in schools, that's a good point. Because I have always felt in schools, competitive things really don't belong. Because you get, with my experience with working with people, you get far greater results through cooperation than you do competition. People working together on a project to get them all to buy in and commit and become stakeholders to it. That's why what's always puzzled me about high school and junior high athletics, the competitive part of it. My gosh, it gets to be ferocious. You know, we all heard about the hockey dads in Boston. They got so caught up, one of them killed the other one.
Now, I mean, saw the video, yeah.
Yeah, this is totally ridiculous. That even the parents have become competitive over this, whereas cooperation does just far better things, greater things, through cooperation.
Well, no, I think, I believe that a certain amount of healthy competition is good. It's just good for people. As a matter of fact, being on the three list all the time, if there hadn't been a little competition, I might not have felt very good about myself until field day when I got to place in almost everything. And scholastically, I was always allowed into the accelerated classes and stuff like that, which wasn't really a competition, but it did give me a sense of a better sense of who I was. And you know, competition isn't always an individual thing. It can be teams with each other. It's a way of, I think it's a big part of who we are.
Well, see, but when it becomes so bloodthirsty.
Yeah, well, there's a certain point, but those guys have emotional problems. Those guys have problems with their...
They're our leaders. These are all the guys that went crazy with ambition. You know, they're the ones that took over. They're the most ruthless people that we have in our society. They're killers of society.
Well, do we really want people like that in society?
They're our leaders. They're the ones running the show right now.
Yeah, I don't. I don't think there's any place in society for people.
Well, our
like
society
that.
Must want them because they're there. But is it possible to wake up and see all that? See these bloodthirsty Caesar-type people that are all power, 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 more power. I mean, take a look at Arnie. What does he represent? Power. He is Power Man, Mr. Universe, Mr. Super Billionaire, Mr. Terminator.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a big reflection on our society, and that's really, I think, the way people, you know, they want theirs, they've got to get theirs. John's back, and he's changed into a different individual now. His name is Mark. And we're going to open the phones here pretty soon or any time. We welcome any callers, comments, or questions for the panel. And Mark is with us. The point of where I was talking with John before he got up and left, is he all right? Nobody knows?
I don't know why he
left. I think it was
left,
like performance art or something, wasn't it?
He said he was going to keep to his place, whatever that was. I think that...
Well, that was weird.
Maybe we should be talking about the degree of destruction that's going on for the schools for people who live in poor school districts, public school districts. 743 school districts, or schools, not districts. Oh, John's back. Well,
hey, don't let me interrupt.
I was just going to say, 743 school districts were wiped out.
Nationwide?
They flunked the No Child Left Behind law, and so technically they could have all of their teachers fired, they could lose their staffs, their children could all be transferred, the schools could be closed and sold. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do question what that law is for. I really think that No Child Left Behind is really intended to
shut down,
wipe out and privatize the poor public schools and turn them into some kind of profit-making enterprise and a place where the children really will learn their place and not be given all of this foolish nonsense about civil rights and things of that sort. So that's what I think.
I think it should be no adult should be left behind.
No child left behind. Well,
I mean, why else? If I could just add one more comment.
Sure.
Fred on the phone.
Why
Why else would the law be designed in such a way that when a school is failing because it's a poor school in a poor district with poor students, do they try and make it succeed by removing its funding? That's the question I ask your panel.
Yeah, well, that is a very interesting thing, and you're right, it does seem to... I'm sure that Forest Hills Northern and Central aren't in a big... aren't in jeopardy of losing their schools. Oh, anyways, we have a caller on the line. We have Fred on the line. Fred, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you barely. Speak up a little.
Hello?
Yeah, that's good.
Good.
Okay, super. I just want to make a comment, and please don't take this the wrong way.
Well, be nice.
I will. I promise. Because I mean this in a good-hearted way.
Okay.
However, I don't think things are as gloomy as the general gist of this discussion has gone tonight. I think sometimes it's important to take a step back, and just the very fact that you guys are on TV, I think really speaks volumes about the amount of freedom that we have in this society and culture. Now, I am not denying the subliminal brainwashing that goes on in our media, in our schools, but you know what? It's our choice as individuals to overcome that, to educate yourself.
To some extent it is.
Well, no. See, I guess that's where you guys and I totally disagree. Not to some extent.
Totally.
It's your right, and it's your obligation and responsibility.
As a human being.
It's always blaming your conditions and the people, the rulers and the people around you for your plight, I think, is a cop-out.
Well, we're all products of our conditioning.
Of course we are.
We can't just escape from it by wishing it to be so. And so to say that we're totally free to do anything is, I think, false.
Well, I
never said that. But.
I agree with you, Fred, that it is a certain part of our responsibility. Like, I don't totally, I don't think the school should be the ones that teach my child everything. I'm giving him old school sci-fi right now. I make him do his own little work. But I didn't want to college. I went and dropped out. But, you know, I read, I educate myself, and I think that we do live in a society where we have access to public libraries, we have access to this TV show, and plus we can come out here and talk freely as we want to about things, and that's wonderful. And you can't do that in a lot of countries.
And that's something I think that we as Americans, because it sounds so corny, but it is so true. I think, you know, we take that for granted in this culture. There, America really does have an incredible tolerance for people saying whatever the hell they want. You may be criticized, you may be yelled at, you may be name-called, but, probably more than any other society that's ever existed on the face of this earth, we protect the individual's right to be who the hell they want to be. And I think we lose sight of that.
Hey, Fred, do you think it's possible that the reason you think that our country is so great and wonderful at that is
Do you have to be so sarcastic?
No, I'm not being sarcastic.
Because you keep saying things that I never said.
No, I'm asking you a question. Do you think it's possible that you think that this society is so free just because you've been taught that it is so free, and that in fact other societies of which you know very little are free.
I've lived in China, I've lived in Japan, I've lived in Europe, so before and you start making assumptions about me, you should ask
No, I'm
questions.
Not making assumptions, I'm asking a question.
Wait, Fred, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Do you think that if you have a rope around your neck and you're tied to a post and somebody comes along with a longer rope and gives it to you, that you're free? Or do you think freedom means taking the rope off of your neck?
Well, the answer to your question is no.
That's right. You're not free just because you got a longer rope. You know, and that's what people try to push off here, that this country is so free, because they seem to give you a little bit longer rope.
Who's they?
Whoever it is that's running the show here.
Hey,
do you really feel that you're just
that's
a
That's what Blue always says. Who's they?
That's my question. I ask that all the time. That's us.
I don't know.
That's you. And me, and John, and Margo.
It's this whole they thing, I guess, is what I'm really reacting to. I myself feel I'm not victimized by anybody. I feel like, you know what? I'm my own person. I can think what I want to think. I can read what I want to read. I can say what I want to say. And they, whoever that is, can go to hell. And I don't buy into that mythology that there's this day that's controlling it. Pardon?
Fred, for the most part, I feel that same way about myself. There's only been one incident in the past couple months where I said something, and I can't repeat it on this show, but someone said you could be arrested and put in jail for that.
Well,
I didn't say it again, ever. Okay.
Well, and you're not. Well, can we ask what that is? I guess not.
Yeah, you can, but I you know,
well,
I really
swear
declined
in front
to
of women and children no. either.
I don't put the value of freedom either so high, and I definitely don't put it on the freedom of speech. I mean, anybody can go into their closet and whisper anything they want to.
You're on TV, dude.
But, yeah, I know that. And I'm just, but this takes a lot, that takes a little bit more than speech. It takes a lot of planning and teamwork. It takes teamwork. It's not just me up here, but there are camera people
right.
and a director and
mm-hmm.
stuff. And that's what I mean by taking individual freedom. I personally don't put that above everything else. I think equality is there, a community, solidarity. These are all equal. And
all right. Fred, they do have names. They have control of most of this money in this world.
Okay, who
they are a very small percentage of people, and they allow us to have this show. They need us to have this show to prove how wonderful a life that we have and how much freedom that we do have. But there are things going on in the fabric of this country that we'd like to address. We don't all agree on this panel. We're not all bleeding heart liberals. Actually, we really kind of are. But they exist. And where do your kids go to school?
My daughter is graduated. So she went to the University of Texas, whatever that's worth. But at any rate, I guess I don't buy this ruling these people with all the money that are pulling all the strings.
Come on, it's been going on forever. It's not the first time. I mean, somebody's got to be in charge, and there's somebody else is always saying something about it, if we're lucky, if we don't live in some dictatorship. It is great that we live here. It is great that we can come on here. It is wonderful that we can try to express our views and that people like you call in, and that's great.
Well, you know, we really have to address the idea of what authority, where authority comes from in the first place. I would suggest that even our own internal authority, like Fred seems to think that he's got all these great things and he's in control of his life. But I would ask Fred, who is it that's in there, Fred, that feels like he's so free? Is it some kind of conditioned person that's been never really thought totally and completely about how fear and freedom are intertwined, but instead has been indoctrinated subtly with a social plan around him as he's been growing up to emphasize this thing about liberty and freedom all the time?
And then call
yourself an American and you call yourself free. How can you be free if you've identified yourself with some group?
I guess all I can tell you is I spent the first half of my life traveling the world on very little money. I didn't graduate from college till I was 40. I don't know. Why do I think I'm free?
Yeah.
Because I've always pretty much done what the hell I wanted. I mean, not killing people or stealing from people, but just I've followed my dream.
Well, you're part of society, aren't you?
Pardon?
You're part of our society.
Absolutely.
You're not isolated off on an island somewhere. You are a member of our society, just
Absolutely.
Like we are.
Yeah.
And the society kills people.
And this society is out there brutalizing third world countries right as we speak.
Well,
you know it, and I know it, and everybody knows it.
No, I don't know that. Don't tell me what I know.
Well, we know it because they're there doing it. We can look through the TV and see them doing it.
Third world countries are brutalizing each other.
Well, they're part of us. We're all one big society.
The United States is not the great Satan. You can believe that if you like. I think that's a very simplistic and no offense here, but childish worldview.
So the United States, when it went over and dropped, 45,000 bombs on Iraq or something like that, it didn't kill anybody? I'm not saying it's a great
Satan terrorist in the world,
or
you know
anything,
that.
But it.
Well, how many Iraqis did Saddam kill?
Probably not that many.
Oh, please.
I don't know.
He killed a lot of Iranians.
I'm not going to support Saddam.
Millions of Iranians.
I'm just saying we don't need people here like Saddam. You know, we got people here that are thinking along the same lines as Saddam. They want to kill people who are getting their way.
But this idea that the rest of the world are these pacifistic, morally noble people running around being oppressed by the United States is silly.
Well, I don't think anybody here said that.
Well, I think you came pretty close.
Well, maybe that's what you perceived it. But we have another caller. Thanks, Fred.
Sure.
Love having you call in. Anytime.
Use your real name next time, please,
L.A. Dave on the phone.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm a big fan of your show. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
And I guess back on the topic of, you know, what can we do about education and what can we do to help our kids out in this crazy world that we live in? I mean, I think the big thing would be to let them know that things just don't remain the same, that it is a rapidly changing community, and that to prepare them that they can't just solve all their problems in one shot, and that things are always going to be changing. The other thing would be, like Blue touched on, this idea of adapting to these changes. But I think we need to spend more time teaching our kids commonplace things like respect and how to treat their fellow people and things of that nature, and less time inundating them with things that they need to get a college degree, for example. As we know, 2 out of the 4 years when you go to college is just general ed. For some reason, they want you to have that before you get your four-year degree. It seems to me that that's just a way to generate money. And so I would see that as the big flaw with schooling at the university level, is it seems to be...
well, they want you to be rounded, you know.
It seems that we've sold out to the sports programs and the television income. That's all I got tonight. I think you guys are doing a great job.
You know... Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say, I agree with you about the respect thing wholeheartedly. I couldn't agree more. And whether or not our schools teach respect, well, they should. I don't know if they do. But that certainly is an item that should be taught in the home.
It's one of the main bases for Montessori. The Montessori method is respect is one of the first things they teach you.
But that, I was taught that at home.
Well, that's where you're supposed to learn it.
For my mother and my father that taught me to respect other people, treat them like I would want to be treated, and it sunk in, and it was very easy. It wasn't a hard thing to learn at all.
Well,
and it seems that children nowadays, this is my opinion.
Basically, we have to respect your children for them to understand.
Yeah, they have a total lack of respect for other people and for property, other people's property, things like that.
I don't have a problem with that myself, really.
With
the respect for property. It's something that's taught. I mean, things grow in the world and they're free for the taking, and it's only through education that we get this ingrained that we're not supposed to do that. That's something how wrong, because generally it doesn't hurt anybody. You know, it does happen that people like beat up people and take their shoes, but that's generally not what crimes are considered to be. It's taking something that was unnecessary to begin with, and someone else doesn't need it either. And
spoken like a true anarchist.
Yeah, but John,
thank you.
What I was thinking of with respect for property was like burning down a forest deliberately, which just happened recently out as a cause of one of the California fires. Someone saw the person do it.
Mentally ill person.
You know, that is lack of total respect.
We have another caller on the line.
Property, the environment. Maybe
Rick.
I phrased it wrong. Environment.
Can you hear me, Rick?
Ricky.
Rick, are you on the line?
Hello? Yeah.
Hello.
There we go.
Yeah.
Rick.
Hey, Rick, we can hear you. Thanks for your call.
Well, you started out the discussion tonight talking about children, and I guess you're sort of still to a certain extent. I wanted to call your attention to a couple of stories that were in the Grand Rapids Press tonight. A couple of issues brought up by two gentlemen which are sort of connected with the media. There's a media center there that's Jeff Smith, who's with the GRID, Grand Rapids Institute for Information Democracy, and then State Representative Michael Sack, who has a television show on this station. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Technical problems tonight, huh? Anyway, both of these gentlemen were bringing up issues. Mr. Smith was talking about tobacco advertising, which is directed at children, And Mr. Sack is supporting a bill in the State House, I believe, which would have certain risque magazines either put in a certain part of the store away from children or covered with cellophane wrappers or what have you. And, you know, both of these issues are, you know, anytime somebody doesn't like something, they always say, well, we got to do it for the children. And you know, Jeff is an extreme liberal, way too liberal to sue me. Mr. Sack is a pretty conservative Democrat, at least his voting record is. I don't know about his personal life. But I guess when you have people like this that want to advance an agenda, which I think, personally, I'm not a smoker, for instance, but I don't think advertising for tobacco ought to be restricted, even to children. I mean, children are going to sneak a smoke, you know, on the playground or wherever if they really want to. They don't need cigarette advertising to tell them to smoke. And as far as protecting the children from looking at risque magazines, I mean, I think a lot of kids know more about sex nowadays than their parents do. You know, it's like the old joke about where the father says to the son, I want to talk about sex, and the kid says, sure, Dad, what do you want to know? And I just wanted to know what you folks think, since you're all pretty liberal free thinkers. Do you think that it's a good idea to restrict tobacco advertising, even if supposedly you're trying
well,
to...
Well, you know, they do... penis camel they had going, and, you know, they admitted that they were projecting that towards kids. They've started it with the little fake cigarettes long ago. And, yeah, they want kids to smoke. They're going to need... You know, you've seen the bodies. Every day they have this pile of bodies that die, and they have to get that many people smoking again. So, of course, they're going to go for the kids. Hitler knew it. You know, they're just following suit. You know, another thing, though, I think is that worse than tobacco, I mean, we know tobacco's terrible, are these commercials for this Applejacks commercial. The kids are eating Applejacks. We eat what we like, or we eat what we want. And they, you know, these with their little fruit strips and all their sugared candies, and they're just pumping all this sugar at the kids like crazy. That is, you know, morally and ethically wrong, and
it's a gateway.
There are
drug.
Some. It's a gateway drug. Yeah.
Yeah, sugar.
Pretty soon, that sugar's not going to get you off as good. You're going to need a little crack or something.
Wow. Rick, to answer your question about what I think, I'm all for restricting these tobacco advertisements, but not because of the obvious reasons. It's because I am for restricting all advertising.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. All of it is ridiculous.
But now you're all talking like right wingers. You want to suppress speech that you disagree with.
Yeah, you can't have both ways, can you?
Well, is it speech? Is it speech
right,
when a corporation is doing this thing, spending billions of dollars? Is that really speech? There's
John, are you saying? Of course, it's speech. Now, John, are you saying?
Is it?
Are you saying because they're corporations that they can't speak?
I wouldn't call it speech.
Ways.
I would not call what corporations do speech. I think people speech. Even chimpanzees with sign language could be considered speech, but a corporation does not speech. It follows a plan. It works out a plan. It's not speech in a human sense, and so I don't think of it as restricting speech.
Do you smoke, John?
Oh, yeah.
You ever look at magazines with good-looking women in them?
Well, I wanted to get back to that about the sex thing. I wouldn't say that erotic magazines is a substitute for sex education. Again, they're two different things.
Magazines.
You know, I mean, the Nature Channel, kids watch that. Eminem's sang about that.
When I was a little kid, I loved
naked
women.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, aside
different things.
Yeah, but who's really for restricting that except for unattractive women and emasculated males?
Oh.
I'm not for restricting anything personally. I just want to understand how this authority got into my life. You know, where did all these influences come from?
Well, that was my question.
Why am I doing all this to myself? Putting myself in all of these positions where I have to make these horrendous decisions about who lives and dies in the world.
Well,
if I'm a reflection of the country that I live in, then why is my country this money-crazed capitalist war machine? You know, we got to look at these things. We got to take a deep, hard look and not just hide ourselves in the latest SUV magazine. You know, we
all right.
Wake up.
Well, we have another caller
before
we
can I
line,
say,
but
say
we're going to let John
I think
retort.
I think this gets to what Rick was saying and Blue and the caller before Fred, because our subject tonight is what kind of society we live in. And then in Fred's case, he was saying, well, Saddam is terrible, but
wasn't Saddam part of our society? I mean, not only the fact that that the U.S. did the CIA thing, but I mean, he worked in a capitalist system. He worked with political parties. They were a high-tech society. They had schooling, education, an incredible engineering cadre. Basically, they were not Muslim, Islamic nation. They weren't a communist nation. And so basically, they fit right into the same society that we're a part of. Except when they turn bad, we say, oh, they're not part of our society. We got to break them away and deny the fact that Saddam Hussein was basically a dysfunctional part of our society.
That's it. Forget about boundary lines and all these things about nationalism.
We have another caller on the line. Steve. Can you hear us, Steve?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I just, I don't know, man. I think there's a whole wild world out there, and it's not that bad. Man. I mean, I kind of agree with Fred. You kind of, you know, carpe diem, man. This isn't, you can sit around on your behind and bemoan how you're being controlled, and you know what? At the end of the day, dude, it's your life, and you need to step up to the plate. And
well, you can sit back and say, hey, everything's cool, my life is great, but in 10 years, 20 years down the line, when there's no jobs here and people are eating each other.
Oh, come on, man.
Hey, what do you mean, come on? Well, you don't think it's possible?
I think...
And, you know, that's why we're here right now, so that we can at least, you know, we at least have the freedom to talk right now.
Yeah.
You know, I might be...
I agree with you.
I might be violating the Patriot Act 1 or 2 right now. They might come knock on my door tomorrow.
Oh,
shut the whole show down.
You know what, man? No one's ever going to do it for you. You got to live your own life. And,
yeah, we are. We're right up here living our own life.
I hear a lot of whining, dude. I hear you whining.
Do you hear me whining? I'm bitching. I'm bitching about things that piss me off. Did you hear me say that I love this country? Did you hear me say that I respect these people? Have you heard me talk about how this country was built on the backs of my father and my grandfather and everybody else, and I don't want to go down the frickin' tubes for some oil in Saudi Arabia? And I'm doing something about it. Denial is not just a river.
what do you think I'm in denial of?
Well, you think everything.
Well,
for one
thing, you're not. You don't seem to realize that people are suffering.
Of course, I realize that.
You do.
Everybody suffers, man.
Well, you were just telling me how great your life is.
You can't be alive on this planet and not know what suffering is. You're supposed to be the metaphysical cat. You should know that. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know anything.
The Buddha
say
life
is
sickness and death. I mean.
No, I really don't know anything. I want to find out about these things. I want to keep asking questions so that I can discover what the heck's going on.
No,
I don't want to just sit back and say, hey, I figured it out already.
Oh, I haven't figured anything out.
Well, you sound like you're pretty complacent.
Here's what I figured out. No one's going to live your life for you, and you can point fingers and blame. At the end of the day, it's the dude you look at in the mirror every morning that determines the quality of your life.
So it's all about you, right? All about me. Mr. Ego.
Well, you think it's all about they.
I do not. Yeah. I say, let's find out what our relationship is with each other. Let's find out how we're connecting to each other, not isolate myself behind some cushy job or some particular little group that I happen to agree with. I want to go into the fray, find out exactly what it is that makes this world what it is. But you sound like you're just, I'm content with my freedom. I don't need to fight for it or do anything about it anymore. I'll let them other people, those 18 to 22-year-old minority youths, go and fight my wars for me. You know, you sound like Mr. America.
So you think we have to fight for our freedom?
No. I think we have to look at ourselves.
How old would this take it for granted? And when it's gone, we won't even freaking know.
Because I just heard you guys saying that we should, you know, we oppress the third world. Now I hear you saying, you know, we got to fight for our freedom. Which is it?
We got to fight for our freedom from the military-industrial corporations that want to make us think we got to fight for our freedom.
There's another fight. Doesn't mean we're going to...
You got to look through the whole thing, see the whole picture, not just isolate yourself in some little pocket and say, my corner of the garden is very nice. Go leave me alone.
I'm just hearing a lot of complaining and a lot of finger-pointing, and it's a downer, man.
Well, I really didn't know that we lived in a utopian society and everything was perfect, but apparently you do.
Oh, I never said that, but...
Well, you didn't. You said everything's great, everything's fine, you guys are just whining.
You know what, we're
doing something about it. We are living our lives.
Replay the tape, and if I said everything's great and everything's fine...
You said... You agree with Fred. You think everything's great. You got great freedom. You love it. Well,
Why are you telling me what I think when I never said that?
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Sure. You seem to be doing the same with us.
Whatever your name was. We have another caller.
Steve.
G.R. Gord. Can you hear me, Gord? Apparently, Gord's not there.
Hello.
Yeah. Oh, Gord is there.
Hey. Oh, sorry.
Hi.
My sugar was low. I was taking a nap.
Oh.
Say, I got a two-part question.
Okay.
First, tell me what your feelings are and what those hoodlums did over at Crescent High School as far as painting up the whole walls and schools and all that. And the second part of the question is why are you against the tobacco ads?
I didn't hear the last part.
Why are you against the tobacco ads?
Right.
Creston, they did some work at Creston, they did?
I think it was swastikas and stuff like that.
Right, exactly.
Kids.
Yeah.
Acting out. Trying to find their place in this world. That's what I think about it.
It's
sure it reflects society as how we are, but it just sounds like a little bit of youthful rebellion to me. I don't know much about it.
Oh, it's a reflection on the parents and the way they brought them up, you know?
Yeah, you could say that, but, you know, I know real good people who have great children, and then I got one that's just horrible.
Oh, is that right?
There's always a black sheep.
Bart Simpsons of society.
The Barts of our world.
Yeah, and I'm not against tobacco ads. I'm just against all ads.
They should what?
I'm not against tobacco ads. I'm against all advertisements.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, so as far as from Tylenol to Viagra to Copenhagen, you're all against all advertisements? So why is that?
That's correct. Yeah. When I watch TV, I see these ads specifically from the drug companies.
Uh-huh.
And if all of the people watching this called their doctor and asked whether this prescription medicine was right for them, my gosh, the doctors would never have time to see any of us as patients because they'd be on the phone all day long. I mean, it is absolutely ridiculous, the prescription drug ads that I really take issue with. But again, I take issue with all ads. I don't like any of them. You know, just take them all off television. Well, magazines.
Personally, to the doctor.
Personally, I'd love to see ads that were really truthful. You know, car ads that showed the tens of thousands of people who are mangled every year. Drug ads that show people puking out their guts and their hair falling out from the side effects that are. They don't show on that.
Well, I think the drunk and driving ads are quite effective.
Those aren't car ads. Those are like anti-ads that are, the whole system needs to push out to keep people
absolutely
conscious. But
that's the purpose of advertising. Right. Bottom line to the company. Increase the profit.
We have another caller on
the
line.
The
it's Tim. Tim, can you hear me?
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
All right.
I'm really good. I just have one comment to make.
All right.
I just want to say that although your choice in style may be kind of odd, I do agree with pretty much everything that you're saying. We need more people out there like you guys to uncover the truth about the corporations and how they want to take over and all this businessless free trade and how it's screwing over our economy right now.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
thanks.
Well,
appreciate it.
We're glad you called. Really, we're fighting these guys tonight.
Yeah. I just to add to that, I know that a lot of people know a lot of what we're already saying. You know, it's not like this is new to anybody here, and probably a lot of the people out there at home, they say, yeah. But they say, well, it's the best it can be. But just get active, you know. Once you know, you can put so much information in your head and know all the facts and say, oh, this is, we're in the crapper. But there's a point where you have to start taking action and, you know, mess things up a little bit, you know, cause trouble. Get yourself in trouble.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I wouldn't go there. But, I'd say find out what it means to understand yourself and that your relationship to society. And if you can start with that, then you can find out if there is a philosophical ground that you stand on. Now, people may think it's passé, but I personally like to see a lot more talk about finding the love amongst people and not make it into such a religious thing. People think you're talking about love, you're talking about religion all the time, but love is really about relationship and finding out how we care about each other and if it's possible that we could build a society based on caring about each other.
I call that community.
A community.
What you call love, I call community.
Compassion.
I think it's the same thing. Yeah.
Well, you can't have community without love.
With taking care of each other, watching out for your neighbor.
I believe the meaning of life is... I know, here we go.
Oh, drum roll.
Heavy, heavy. My close-up, please. The meaning of life is relationships with other people that you nurture them and they nurture you in the same respect. I mean, what else is there? I mean, that just might be it, you know? I mean, there may be nothing else beyond this.
Well, yeah.
If we're going to spend our time thinking about ourselves and our trucks.
Right, the self thing, that really throws us off.
Kathy.
Oh, we have another call. Excellent.
Kathy, our last caller.
Kathy, we have one more caller on the line.
Kathy's off. Give us a call back, Kathy. We got about 5 minutes
left. We got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, you know, we're just so competitive. We seem to have forgotten cooperation.
Back to what I said at the beginning. Cooperation yields much better results than competition ever can.
Well, I think competition, understanding it means finding out what you're capable of, and not comparing yourself to anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could find out that each individual fully flowered as a complete person, then I think just the act of doing that will render competition obsolete.
I heard an interesting story about competition. Maybe not a story, but an illustration that was how to get, if you have 100 people running a race, how do you get the least overall time, everybody to run fast enough? And the way to do it isn't to pay the winner the number one spot, the grand prize, and then 2 and 3 smaller prizes, and then everybody else nothing. What you do is you say, well, how well did you run it last time? How much better did you run it this time? And once you reach the level that you're as fast as you can, then it pays to go back and help somebody else run the race. You know, someone in a wheelchair, you push the wheelchair, and the whole overall time of the race is going to keep going down and down and faster and faster.
I agree. That's competition within yourself. You're competing against yourself.
Yeah, it's it breaks through the dichotomy between cooperation and competition. You see them as opposites, but actually, you know, you can find ways to bring out the best of yourself without putting anybody else down or leaving them in the dust. Eating your dust.
It's very important to know who these other people are in our society. Because rather than just pointing them out, like Fred said earlier, the they out there, they is really a reflection of our own personalities as a humanity. We don't isolate ourselves or fragmentize ourselves.
So we're wrapping up.
Then we're cool. What's the fragmentation of society that causes this demise?